Dropout Podcasts.
Welcome, travelers, to Tales from the Closet. I'm your host. Help. I'm your host, Allie Beardsley. This show is, I'm really struggling with the candles. Yet again, some more bullshit at the top for people listening to it just on Spotify. I'm currently dropping candles. Welcome. If you're in the closet, this podcast is for you. If you used to be in the closet, it's also for you. If you have never been in the closet, lucky you. what's that like? What do you think a secret is? today we have a very great episode. I'm very excited for all three of our amazing guests. And if you're listening to this in its podcast form, know that you can subscribe to Dropout to support us. We don't have a Patreon or anything like that, but we do have this streaming online service. I believe it's like $4 or $5 a month. I'm getting a head shake. No, I'm not quite sure which way to take that. It's more or less.
Perhaps $5.99.
Perhaps $5.99.
But
thank
for you,
Jess. But for you listening right now, wow. Use promo code Blue Apron to unlock a free
Y'all's
month.
Marketing strategies are slick.
That's my favorite part. I've been listening to podcasts, and when they like seamlessly go, it's like a sex and love podcast. And it's like, well, if you gave a blowjob too early, it's never too late to sign up for Blue Apron. Like, what? I'm thinking I might start doing that for companies that haven't asked me to. So we'll see. Maybe that'll come out today. You know what? Enough about Blue Apron. Let's move on to our guests. Who are you and what are you doing here? No, I'm kidding.
Hello, I am Jess. I'm a writer here at College Humor. I'm bi. My pronouns are she, her, and she.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just a little bit about me.
I'm Reed Bryce. I'm a comedian writer, and my pronouns are they and he.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm Holland McFallister. I'm an actor, comedian. My pronouns are he and him and hey. And I identify as homoromantic asexual.
Oh.
So if you're looking for a little niche,
thing going on. I love it. The more specific we can get. That's great. Thank you all for being on the cast today. Usually we kick things off with, when did you come out of the closet? What did it look like? How did it feel? Kick us off, baby. Anyone.
I'll start us off. I can't remember if this was in the last episode. I think so. But I had an interesting coming out story. I was in a, kind of sensed and knew that I was attracted to both men and women since I was a kid. And kind of experimented with it a tad in college, but never, like, even thought being bi was a real thing just because of so much stigma that was around it. Like, it's, you know, just for attention, which I probably at the time did want some attention too. So I was like, well, maybe that's it. So never romantically pursued anything that maybe I was interested in out of fear and anxiety and guilt and misunderstandings around what I was. When I was in Philadelphia, I was in a long relationship with a man that ended, and I had planned on moving out to Los Angeles, and then this woman, Kate, who had also been in a very long-term relationship with her ex, they broke up, and she was like, hey, I'm interested in moving to LA too, and I was like, cool, great, and we started planning the trip out here, and we were going to be roommates, and then as we kind of were planning the trip, started having romantic feelings, started hooking up, sleeping together. And then it was like, am I ready to live with somebody again? Like, then it felt like a huge, like, what's happening? I don't even know, like, how to define myself or how to define this or what's going on. And it kind of just took this thing of like, well, let's just kind of each day that you're happy and it's working, just follow that and don't really worry about labeling it so much. So we drove across the country, boned across the country, got to LA, hadn't told my family. We bought this huge like king size bed from IKEA, and then my mom like came to visit, and it was like trying to find a weird excuse for why we had a king size bed but we're roommates. And then when my mom got home from that trip, she like called me and was like, do you and Kate have a special relationship? And I was like, yeah, we do. We're together. And I think around that point was maybe when we had like just first started to say I love you too. So it kind of all felt like the right way to go about it coming out. And my mom was a little shocked. I remember her saying like at first, like, this isn't what I thought for you. Like, I didn't think you'd be with a woman. And it's like, well, a lot of things in life happen that you don't think. So I don't know what to tell you. Yeah.
That's not how kids work.
Yeah. Yeah.
This isn't The Sims where you get to control. Like, each, yeah. You know.
I mean, she was far more, not that she was upset about it, but far more upset about just hearing that I was going to move. She was like, how could you have done this to me? I was like, I don't know, mom. So that's my, at least, that she was, I guess, coming out to friends too was interesting as well, because they had a lot of friends had moved from Philly to here at the same time and knew us one way, so it was like telling them, understanding us as straight before, and then people out here only knowing us as like not really even bi, but like lesbians together, but identifying as bi. So it was always this weird, like, new people meet me and think I'm a lesbian, and old people see me as straight, but like I'm bi. So having to like redefine yourself that way too.
Totally. I loved how you said, like, people would think that you're just doing it for attention, and you're like, maybe at that time I did want a little attention.
Like, it's hard when people say it, because it's like, yeah, I'm a high school student who nobody will have sex with. Like, yes, I do want attention for sure.
But
so.
It's just so annoying, like, that what people put on other, like, sexualities other than straight. Like, they're like, oh, you're just doing that because you want love and affection and a partner. You know, it's
or
like, yeah,
just every type of sweet. Sex is for the benefit of a man. Like, oh, well, you must be attracted to a woman because you want this man to watch it and think that it's hot.
Oh, yeah,
like,
fully.
So much of women, having to be, like,
thinking that you're being, like, really performative. And
It's always, like, treated with the gravity of like, what's the grift here?
What's the big idea?
Realized, actualized human being sounds pretty good. And they're like, we'll see, buddy.
They're like, really? No, I'm gonna figure this out. I'm gonna get to the bottom of this. You're like, no, it just doesn't include you. They're like, you're playing games with me.
Sounds like a scam.
Even to this day, if we're, like, just walking down the street holding hands, it's usually, like, a man who will either, like, whistle or think, like, we're both there for, like, his enjoyment or pleasure. Oh, and it's like, this has nothing to do with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I once had a man buy my groceries. My partner and I were in...
I mean, that one...
I'm into that.
I mean, of course we took it, but, like, it was crazy. I was just like, what the fuck world am I living in? Whereas my brother is, like, you know, beat up his whole life for being gay. And it's like, okay, I don't... This is a nightmare.
Definitely see where I, at least, especially safety-wise, am in a different situation than maybe a man who is bi or, you know, other people who are different sexual orientations. Because, I'm like a white woman with another white woman. And, men are like, oh, well, that's my, like, sex object.
Yeah.
Although that article I saw the other day came out, like, two women in London who got, like, beat up.
Yeah, it was
because they wouldn't
shame.
Kiss. And there have been times when people have, like, spit on me and Kate, or, like, it does feel like, oh, yeah, like, what are you, like, it does feel like if we're not sexual for their pleasure right in front of them, that there might, something might escalate.
Good God. Yeah.
So when I read that, I was like, oh, I could see situations where maybe we were close to having something like that, or you're, like, followed for a bit, or a car is following you for a bit, and you're like, you can put people in a car very easily and drive off.
Yeah.
So my heart goes out to those two women. I hope that they're
okay. I know.
Okay.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah.
Okay, how did you guys come out? What was your...
Oh, well, I think I had a couple of goes trying to do it before it took. I was about 5 years old the first time I tried to tell my family I was actually a little boy, and they were under the impression I was a little girl.
Wow.
And because they were Southern Baptists, they decided we were going to go ahead and have me keep pretending to be a little girl. And if you think about it, it's wild. If a story came out that a family was forcing a little cisgender boy to wear his hair long and dress like a girl and go by a name that he didn't like, it would be like, you know, the next Sybil movie. Everyone would be like, who are these monsters?
Yeah.
But I tried to come out, and I think what had happened is I saw a drag queen for the first time on TV or something. I think this was around the time that RuPaul had like Supermodel drop as a single, and drag became something that, in the same way that it is right now, really in the zeitgeist. And I was like, oh, you can choose?
Yes.
That's how, as a child, I thought it was. And so I like proudly went up to them and was like, just so you know, I'm actually a boy and I'm going to need to have boy clothing. And, you know, and they were just like, no, suppress.
Really? Wait, where are you from? Which area?
From Riverside County here in California.
Oh, man, me too.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
So I'm from Norco, California.
Oh, I'm from like Paris.
Yeah, I know where Paris is.
Paris,
yeah.
I hate saying it. I'm like, I'm from Paris, and everyone gives me way too much credit.
No.
Oh, oui.
I remember
like,
you.
No.
This won't mean anything to anyone else, but it was a big deal that y'all had an In-N-Out because there was a big billboard that was like a 3D burger. Oh, so that's how I know Paris.
I took so many photos in front of that for MySpace. I'm really into burgers,
that's
y'all.
That's something that a MySpace teen in Paris, California would be doing. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And Norco, California, if you don't know, is a very, very red state kind of town here in Blue State, California. And so because we lived in a place where it was like farming community, very conservative, and I was also with some crazy Southern Baptists and the white ones, so it's not even like a fun Southern Baptist church to go to. The music's not good. I just had to like, I was like, all right, well, I guess this is something I just keep inside of me and maybe I can forget about it. And then 2016 happened, the election happened, and, just having a nervous breakdown and realizing that there were children, like actual little children, who were coming out and being far braver than my cowardly ass was being about it. And so I walked into the place I was working one day, and I saw all of these like post-it notes in the women's room, like, and they were just like notes like comforting each other, because this was like the week or so after.
Aww.
Like just filling up the entire bathroom, and I just got overwhelmed, and I locked myself in a bathroom stall, and I texted my boyfriend at the time, I'm trans, and it kept autocorrecting to trains. And I just was like, am I not supposed to say this?
Yeah. I'm trains. Oops, trains. Trains.
Because I was crying. I was just getting so frustrated. I was like, maybe I won't do this now. And so I came out to him first. And then a few months later, that was like November. And then around, I think right after Christmas, I just went ahead and came out to everybody else.
Wow.
And I think I had just recently come out as queer. And so I was like, oh, that wasn't the whole story. I buried the lead. Women are actually not necessarily us people I'm interested in, but I think you're all beautiful. And I happen to be a dude. Thank you.
Wow. Oh, so that was your, because I'm really fascinated by this. I had this like inkling of like, oh no, I'm only into women. Mm-hmm. So that forced me to come out. And then gender stuff came afterwards.
Right.
But imagining being like, no, I'm into men. And then you're like, and also I am.
Right. It's so like in some ways being a little gay boy who was closeted, like there were some like even advantages because I didn't necessarily have to like worry about being bullied for wanting to play with Barbie dolls.
Oh my.
And being effeminate.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. Even as a little boy, they would call me a tomboy, but I was the one who would burst into tears the moment I had to go play with the boys because they wanted to just play.
And everyone was like, oh my God, of course not. Yeah. You don't have to do that.
Yeah. And like, because they would, at that time, it was still super casual to be homophobic. There was even like a kids' game called, and are you okay with like
Smear the Queer?
Yeah.
Yes, I knew you were going to say
it. I was always
it.
The queer. They knew somehow.
Yeah.
So
I remember that.
Yeah, and so being attracted to men, I was like a little bit, I was like, maybe I am attracted to women in that vagueness when you're first coming out. And I had to really do some like self-crit about that. Mm-hmm. And say like, what am I just trying to explore for the sake of it and what is actually true to my own experience, my own identity.
Yeah. Do you feel yourself being bi now, bisexual, or mostly interested in men?
Funnily enough, it was when I started my medical physical transition, as we would call it, where, you know, the body changes happen more. I actually tried sleeping with a woman for the first time, and she sat me down and told me very gently, broke it to me, honey, you're gay. You're very gay.
What?
You little faggot.
No way.
Yeah, now she and I are like fabulous friends. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I've slept with like a couple of women, but yeah, not for me.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. Wow, that is so wild.
Yeah.
I love that. And Holland, you?
Oh my God. First of all, I love trains, and I would have loved to have come out as a train. I wish I'd had that option.
I'm trained.
That's your truth, honey.
I went from L.A. to Boston. Yeah. I just loved it.
A lot of men online on the on the alt-right like to tell me they're attack helicopters, so you do whatever's right for you.
Thank you. I have permission. You know, it's so funny because, you know, kind of formulating, you know, what answer, and there's so many random parts to this. And the overriding theme is that confusion has followed me my entire life to this day. So my first erotic imagery we had, and first of all, I think I'm your oldest guest you've had. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for being on.
So a lot of stuff I talk about is from a different time in a different period.
Love it, yeah.
So I grew up with Playboy in the house. And you know, now Playboy doesn't even have naked women in it anymore. You know, yeah. That's the change. So the whole thing was when your folks left the house was you ran and found the Playboy.
Wait, who? Just like your parents had it? Or this is like
the porn
stash? Yeah, my dad
subscribed to it.
Wow. Yeah.
And it wasn't particularly
Dads were shameless,
hidden.
At least about Playboy, because it was like considered like a mainstream sort of magazine.
We were also pretty,
yeah.
I had pretty forward-thinking parents.
Oh,
I mean,
cool.
Let's just say they were the first in our area to have a hot tub in the backyard, and they had guests, and they, you
oh,
know.
Oh, wow.
I'll just leave it there. Massachusetts.
Okay.
Cape Cod.
Right. Cool.
So I was really turned on by women, you know, and it was just like, ah. And then I remember, I mean, it's so funny because it was a long time ago, but I remember one day I was flipping through the magazine and I came through the fashion spread. I was like, oh, they look nice too, you know. And kind of part of my truth is I've always found human beings sexy, male and female, from the waist up. And I've always found the waist down a little problematic.
Wow.
I love it.
So there was a long period where the hardest part about coming out was that I came out as gay. I only learned the word asexual like a year ago, or as a concept, as an option.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that this appears on YouTube, because YouTube was like my second coming out, because it was watching all these millennials. I was like, oh my God, you know, the options now. I
yes.
mean, you know, please listen carefully. The menu has changed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So at that time when I came out, there's a name that some of your listeners may know, and I don't know if any of you will. Harry Hay. Mm. He's called the father of gay liberation. He started the first gay organization. It was one of the founders of the first gay organization in this country called the Mattachine Society. And I came out to my family as gay when I was, when I was 18. I did have a couple of experiences with women.
Mm-hmm.
The two things I remember is the woman was, I don't want to be graphic, but oral sex. Can we say
yeah,
oral
yeah,
sex?
Yeah, of course. So, you can honestly say whatever
okay.
you want.
So
this is a very
she kept coming up for air and saying, you think this is fun for me?
Oh,
you think I'm enjoying
God.
This? So that was my first experience with a woman. So that was
being oh interrogated God. About how you're wasting her time.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
that
so
be.
So that
oh
wasn't a that wasn't a great first experience.
No, I would
then
say.
Then there
not.
Were others that were equally not so great.
Was
but
she a stand-up comedian?
No. Well,
that
actually,
so
maybe
like,
a little
is this
bit.
Thing on?
Yeah, exactly.
But the real memory I have with trying to have sex with a woman is her saying to me, is me saying, I am relaxed, I am relaxed.
Oh, goodness.
Never tell someone to relax when they're in that
oh, no.
It doesn't help.
Yeah. Never tell your partner to relax ever.
Anyway,
it doesn't work.
even way beyond the age where, you know, people had usually figured out their identity, I was still thinking, male, female animals, there must be another choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they're just, because I didn't quite have a thing for all of them. But here's where I'm not really the poster boy for asexuality either, and where I feel, you know, not gay enough and not asexual enough. Mm. I do have a libido, and I am attracted to people, and I can be, it's almost like, you know, I'm a bit of a grammar geek, and, yeah. you know, some verbs take objects and some don't. Mm-hmm. And for me, sex is like energy. And it's like a verb without an object. So wow. I will be aroused, I'll be sick, but it doesn't result in I want to perform what's traditionally thought of. I'm sensuous. I mean, you know,
yes.
I've tried going to a couple of cuddle parties. To me, that's like an orgy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I had a Me Too experience at a cuddle party.
Okay, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I am too. So that's kind of not anything. But back to the coming up. So I'm someone who, you know, that kid who couldn't keep a secret, who had to tell on people, you know, who just had to be the righteous, you know, Dudley Do-Right, and I just couldn't keep a secret.
The narc.
So I was at, what was that?
You were the narc at school.
I identify as a narc.
It was like when the kids were burning down, you know, a building, I was the one who called, so thankfully the fire department came.
I was probably the one who brought matches. Yeah, yeah. It was like, hey, you want to see something cool?
I remember you.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was a whole confluence of things that went on. I think I was 18. Oh, it's interesting remembering because I came out as vegan the next year, and that was probably harder with the family. there's a few things. So going back to Harry Hay, there's a movie that came out in theaters, and it was called Word Is Out.
Oh, yes.
You know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So for people who don't, it was just interviews with gay people. Very similar to what you have here. But it was so radical at that time to go to a movie theater and hear gay people talk.
Because what year was this?
It's in the 70s.
Yeah.
I have to do some math to get the year. So I saw that movie, and in the movie, it was Harry Hay and his partner, John Burnside, and they were just magical. They were like the old men that everyone wants to grow up to be, no matter what your gender or orientation. They were
right.
just wise and open and wonderful. And, you know, to Skip, I ended up living with them. And that was just
really?
Amazing, yes. But at the time, I saw that movie. I went to, it wasn't the Pride Parade, but they used to have, and maybe they still do, a rally. Mm-hmm. In like a little park before the parade. And I got so riled up, I had to make the phone calls. And I was here in California. Everyone else was back east. So it was, I think, July 4th, Independence Day. I called everyone. I was hoping for champagne bottles to be brought out. It wasn't quite that.
Mm.
But again, I come from a great Jewish liberal upbringing. And, you know, there was no shunning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the I got kind of the words like, you know, well, we're not thrilled about it, but of course we still love you.
Mm-hmm.
And the aftermath was my mother ended up going to talk to our rabbi. And the rabbi said, well, it sounds like he's fine with it, so maybe you should get some help.
Hell yeah, Rabbi!
Wow.
Yay, our liberal Judaism.
Yeah,
yay.
Wow. Yeah, what's that like?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because I now live in the district where there's a lot of Orthodox Jews, and you know, and they're. View is so different from my
upbringing.
A little
upbringing. Bit
different,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look at these people in my mind, I always go, my people, but not my people.
Yeah, yeah.
it's kind of that. So it got to such a comfort level. Around that time, my parents moved to Mexico, and they retired there. And I remember we're sitting, you know, this beautiful veranda overlooking, and they had a gay friend, and it was the four of us. And the gay friend of my parents said, where are you from? And at that time, I was living in New York, and I said, Queens. And the guy said, I didn't ask you what you are, I asked you where you're from.
Oh,
and we all
God.
Had such a good laugh, and it was that moment where I realized, wow, there's just total comfort with my parents at this
oh,
point, you know.
Amazing.
So they went through their journey and I went through mine. But the oddest part is it was tougher for me because I lived with the identity as gay and always felt like such a failure at it. I never felt probably the least comfortable room for me to be in was one that was all gay men.
Interesting.
And I'd say today, it's still not the most comfortable room for me to be in. And an all straight environment is not the most comfortable. A queer environment, and that's mixed male, female, non-binary. Any, when you put, you know, all of it, that's when I'm kind of feel at home.
Same. I feel the same way when it has like a political bent to it versus like a party, bent, you know?
Right.
When you go to something and it's like a vodka Red Bull party and it's like, this is gay versus when you go to, yeah, like a rally. I feel so much more comfortable there.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Like what you said about before about like walking in and being like, these are my people, but they're not my people.
Yeah. Exactly.
I feel that every time I go into the Abbey in West LA.
Yeah, yes.
Oh my God.
Someone immediately steals your phone. And yeah. Someone's
I'm like, I'm too working class
drink.
To be here, honey. I gotta get out of here.
For a long time, I thought that that came from not being gay pretty enough. Gay pretty, because I never wanted to say, you know, but gay pretty enough. But I later realized, no, it was because it wasn't who I am, and I think people could sense that. Because there are plenty of people who compensate with humor. No, I don't want to say compensate. That's a bad word. But who are accepted based on other things. I mean, in the gay community.
Totally, yeah.
In the Abbey community, let's you know, be specific. You are, you know, looks is a calling card.
Mm-hmm.
And then other things can be a calling card. And I didn't really have any of those prized attributes.
I feel like in the gay male community, it's so cutting at sometimes.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It can be just so like that, you know.
It's a lot of sizing each other up.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's men.
Yeah.
It's competitive. And all of them have like daddy issues, so they're ready to fight each other.
Yeah. Yeah, my brother, like just talking about like our friend groups and stuff, my brother will just be like, this guy said this weird thing to me about the hat I was wearing. I was already feeling uncomfortable.
I feel like almost what was like thrown at them by straight men maybe in school, they end up like throwing on each other. Like this is how you be the dominant male in this situation.
Yeah. That is so interesting. It's so jock. And I'm like, that is who put you down all growing up, and now you're like emulating this like jock look. There's like a gym themed bar here, like down the street. And I'm like, okay, like cool Letterman's Jack. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like 10 years too late. Like move on.
Right.
Stuck in trauma.
I don't know. There can be something kind of liberating in being able to take that hypermasculinity though, and to extract heterosexuality from it, and like in the vein of like, you know, Kenneth Anger films and stuff. You know, like the leather biker scene, and in the leather community, it is a lot. You know, ironically, you know, they're hitting each other with whips, but there's a lot less like toxicity to the interaction.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I'll say BDSM is absolutely the most like consent filled world, and it's so sweet
true.
And
I've
caring.
Never thought of that.
And you know, you have to be because you're gonna go so far with it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh. Cute.
And though it's not my thing, just it is good to know that there is vegan leather bondage.
Is there really?
Yeah,
there's a whole online thing that caters to
I love that. Oh, that's so
no
sweet.
No animals were harmed in this whip.
Yeah,
you will be.
You will be, but no animals.
Yeah. The only pig here is my boyfriend. Yeah.
One little pig was harmed. They were a human. All right, great. Well, we are going to move on to our haunted word, which today is the word spectrum. It's a cable service that you too can sign up for. No, I was just kidding. But please do send me money. Spectrum, Fios, anyone. Honestly, just send me a DM.
Our haunted word is Fios.
Today is Fios and Threadless. Yeah, how many more brands can I say? Literally so sorry. So spectrum, what does that make you feel? And where do you feel on which spectrum?
Okay, because we're probably talking mostly about like gender and sexuality spectrums for this sort of stuff. And it's endlessly fascinating to me because I feel like gender is a grift.
Is a grift.
Is an actual scam. Is a scam. And so when I first came out, it was just as non-binary, and my pronouns were just they and them, and I didn't change my name for a good, I think, 6 months or so. And it was a really weird experience trying to figure out where you fit. on what most people think as just being traditionally two rods, and then realizing that there's a whole space in between it and potentially outside of it. And then as far as my sexuality, I was like, oh, well, I only like maybe men, maybe other mask people. I don't know any other trans men, but if I did, would I be sexually attracted to them? And so it's taken me a long time, and I feel like I'm still going to be on that journey for a while, because I only came out at 27, 28, and I'm like 32 now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I was 29. Yeah, it hasn't been that long.
Yeah. Lying about your age already.
Yeah, wow. Wow. So is it a grift in the sense that you are grifting, or that you're being grifted?
No, and I feel like we all are just being forced to go to make these decisions about what is gendered and what performs as a certain gender. But I'm realistic about it. So I say, no matter how I feel on the inside and what I know to be my own truth, I also know there has to be a working truth. I got this brainwave actually from some terrible people. I won't say their names. We'll say Lem Tamiro.
And
Pear Fight. And Pear Fight is a trans woman who loves to be a lapdog for conservatives and just go on and nod along to whatever garbage they're saying. But she did go on and try to at least fight for her own humanity with this man, and said, like, okay, say you say that I am a biological man to you, but let's say you go and meet me at a restaurant, and because she's Paris hyphen, you go and meet me at a restaurant, and the maitre d' says, okay, who are you looking for? Are you going to point to me and say, that man over there? No, you're going to say that woman over there, because it saves time, it's efficient, and that's what the working truth is for everybody else. So I also know that there's like a working truth for what my identity is, and I can, you know, I can alter that as I go. But for like a, you know, if I'm walking through the world, I'm just seen as a man, and because of my inherent femininity, or what we would call an effeminate nature, I'm seen as a hyper visible gay man most of the time. So yeah, I would say it's so in flux, the spectrum, that I even in what I think is like the absolute truth, I don't, about my identity, even if I were to be able to arrive there, the perception of the rest of the world, I don't know how it's affecting how I feel about myself.
Yeah.
And I don't know at what point I just have to be practical and be like, I'm just a little gay dude. I'm not a non-binary homo-romantic person, because the average person, you know, Sally in Milwaukee is going to be like, what?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I see some. He's saying like some kind of fruit.
I almost like don't want to fuck with that. It would be so nice and pure to be like, I don't care what the world thinks. This is what I look like. But yeah, there is a level of like, you know, you're kind of at your wit's end when you don't have any visibility in the world and you're just kind of like misgendered time after time. And, you know, you don't feel like you're legible.
Yeah. And you don't also want to have the internalized guilt of not constantly sticking up for yourself, especially with strangers.
Impossible.
You don't want to be to the supermarket clerk who in no way was trying to offend you by misgendering. You'd be like, how dare you assume my pronouns, ma'am?
Yeah.
I happen to be a non-binary individual.
Anyone
who's at work,
I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? Like service industry, I'm like, this is not the battle that I want to fight. But hey, it would be nice if some higher up had like a gender training seminar at Taco Bell. Come on, people. Like,
I'm misgendered all the time, by the way, especially when people aren't looking at me. And I even grew I had really long hair for a while. And I grew a mustache to help people out. And it didn't work. I'd still have grocery, you know, clerks that, you know, will that be all, ma'am?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
hey.
I did this for you.
This is all for you.
I hate this. This is for you.
But they're usually self-correct. It's usually when people weren't directly looking at me. I'm sorry.
No. And I think also realizing that misgendering also does happen to cisgender people, it's always taken with way more gravity and respect. They're always like, oh, I'm so sorry, sir.
Right.
Yeah. But that also helped me along with my journey and like trying to accept who I am, because there are a lot of cisgender men. Like my last serious boyfriend before I came out, he was very self-conscious. Sometimes he has a high voice. He would be mistaken for a woman all the time on the phone, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so like those sort of experiences, while, you know, uncomfortable, I'm like, okay, well, that really helped me wrap my mind around the fact that I can't have a fixed point of what masculinity is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would love to be operating on like this plane where I'm kind of like, okay, I'll do things to help people out, but then also have like a future, like a futuristic thought in mind of like, let's start to kind of get this gender binary taken apart in little ways,
right,
so that there is a future where I don't have to like, you know, shave my head to be gendered correctly when,
right,
I don't want that. Like, maybe,
right,
I want really long hair and painted,
yeah,
nails, and for people, for that just to be off the table, the gendering of everyone, you know.
I think that will just take time, especially,
yeah,
with how gendered like most of the, like, especially in English, like all of the origins of our languages are Romantic, which are heavily gendered.
Yes,
right.
Incredibly.
We have to like break our,
right,
languages.
French people are like, the salt is a man, and you're like, oh great, I'll literally
but
never
I can't be.
Get understood.
Not my salt.
Be.
Yeah, not,
okay,
my salt.
Yeah. Not my salt. Gaston. Yeah.
So.
Well, oh, and back to the spectrum, because you were saying you identify as a asexual and aromantic?
Homoromantic.
And then...
biromantic curious.
what they call, and you said like you sometimes have libido. Do they call it gray ace? I'm trying to...
Yeah, the only thing with gray ace, because I've tried to figure it out, there is actually a very complicated word that I meant to bring with me, but I forgot it, that kind of describes me better than gray. It's something very clinical, like chlori something, chloririsis. I don't know. It's very complicated. But it is people who are turned on by images and things, but don't. It's very telling. I did talk therapy for a year, which I loved. It was great. And it's mostly about my obsessive compulsive disorder. It wasn't mostly about sexual identity. But we were talking about sexuality, and, you know, he was asking me what, you know, I turned me on or something, and I was describing something, and I was describing others. And he said, well, where are you in that picture? And that really made me stop. And he said, oh, are you maybe like more the voyeur? And, I mean, no one wants to be called a voyeur.
Yeah.
But I thought, yeah, that is true. I am kind of outside it.
Well, there's a consensual voyeur. There's absolutely room,
yeah,
for that.
Well,
to give yourself,
I mean,
that.
I'm not sure I really want to watch,
oh,
real,
yeah,
people. And I do like certain forms of, so it's somewhere between gray. I'm definitely not aromantic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely not. I get gushy feelings. Usually,
yeah,
because
aromantic,
right,
are the people who don't experience the romantic feelings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, you know, as
totally.
I say, I mean, I'd love to be the poster boy for something, but I'm the poster boy for nothing. Because it's just, you know.
I don't think so. I think you are the poster boy.
I'm
here,
the poster,
right,
boy for people who don't know what the heck.
Yeah.
You know. But you know, there's an interesting parallel, because I thought, I'm sorry, did I cut
oh,
you off?
Oh, not at all.
Okay. So, you know, we all have running threads in our life, things that just keep coming apart and coming together. Mm. And one of mine has always been spirituality and different. We were talking about this earlier. Mm-hmm. I've been a member of every religion for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, from pagan to Methodist, you know,
yes,
and things you've never heard of. But right now, I keep getting drawn back to the study of Advaita, which is also known as non-duality. It kind of doesn't see any permanence to what we are. It sees a permanence. It doesn't see us separate from God stuff, you know, and that we are that there is no there for you, you know. And when you think about it, are you your thoughts? Well, your thoughts change all the time. You know, are you your feelings? Well, which feelings? The ones you had this morning or yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of the thing with when I think of spectrum, I think of labels. And labels, I mean, the number one use of labels is marketing. Right? If we,
yeah,
can't label,
yeah,
you, we can't sell you something.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know your demographic. So that's one. But it also can add a prism or a paradigm to view yourself in the game. You know, if you see this as an illusion or as a game, well, we're playing it. We're,
yeah,
here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got four markers on the board right,
mm-hmm,
in this, you know, right here. So in that game, what helps you? You know, and I think part of labels are when you name something, you have a different relationship to it, right? It's the same with animals. People have a different relationship to an animal with a name to an animal that doesn't have a name. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have a name for what you think you are at any given moment, it does give you a certain sense of belonging, mm-hmm. and a certain sense of, ah, that's what I am.
I mean, that's why people take these, you know, like, I'm a Hufflepuff quiz.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're all really, there is comfort in a label.
It's wanting to belong, you know, and wanting to feel part of.
And at the same time, though, it can make people frightened to accept that label too, because it can feel very limiting.
Can I live up to it?
Yeah,
can
especially in queer communities, it can get very much like, are you doing this correctly?
Right. Yeah.
So you should, you know, you should wear the label. The label shouldn't wear you.
Right.
You know, that's it. You should use it and feel free to change it on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you today? That's, you know, when I do, I mean, that was really kind of my thing about coming on here is like, what am I, you know, what am I going to be tomorrow?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, well, totally.
Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, there was a woman who I think was a producer or something on something that we did. And I guess she would write her pronouns on the whiteboard each day of how she was feeling.
That's great.
And I like that fluidity. And I especially like that happening in like the context of like a film crew, which is just kind of like, you know, like people who are like, I don't know, like just give me one, you know, like I need a call at you from across the room. Maybe I haven't seen the whiteboard today, but it was just kind of like mischievous.
I had a frightening, inappropriate moment where I was talking in front of a woman and her child, a very, very dear friend, and the child identifies as non-binary, and I began to say to my friend, your daughter, and I realized that was incorrect, and I froze. I was just like, I don't know what to say. I mean, it was like the worst moment in my life. And they were like, child, your child. Yeah.
But I do it. Gosh, I would love some, because when I think about being like, if about having kids, I'm like, well, they call me parent. My brother calls me his sibling. And I'm like, these feel so clinical and weird. Like, I want something cuter than that.
Let me tell you what my mother said, because I... my mom was just great. Well, she passed away a couple of years ago. Mm. We talked on the phone every single day.
Oh,
and when I was coming to this thing about asexuality and developing a routine about it, she was completely baffled by it, and I was still a little baffled by it. And she said, how about I just call you Holland?
Aww.
I mean, how about we just use that?
So
your kids can call you Allie.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, that's problem solved.
Yeah, and I mean, that's how they do it in a lot of Europe. I remember when I first met my girlfriend, she called her parents by their first names, and I was like, oh, you grew up in a cold household.
Wow.
And it was like, no, that's like what people do. Like, oh, that's so funny.
Or they can call you Mummy Dearest.
Yeah.
You
must
dearest.
Call me Mummy Dearest. All right, we're going to hop into arguably my favorite part of every show, which are questions from viewers. Sometimes they write their name and their pronouns so that we know what to use in this answer. Sometimes they are anonymous, and I understand. Okay, hopping right in. As someone who is on the aromantic asexual spectrum, how do I fill my need for non-sexual intimacy, i.e. hand-holding, cuddles, etc., without being in a romantic relationship? Sincerely, Lindy, they, them. I would imagine this is a question for you, Holland. You're our expert here. You're our poster boy.
You know, human touch is so vital, and it really is necessary. And I feel a lack of it right now. I did something before my bad experience with the cuddle thing.
Yeah.
It was another group that no longer exists, and they were great because it was very orchestrated and very well facilitated. And at the end of that evening, I felt it was basically a gay thing, but it was sensual touch. And it was amazing because I felt, you really felt the glow that you associate with sex at the end of the evening. I mean, I really had no idea that you could feel that to that level. So there's two suggestions I would have. One is really weird, but...
go on.
I did this for years. My body no longer really, it's not really comfortable for me to do anymore, but I did gay square dancing for years.
Oh.
And I even at the yearly conventions used to do the nude gay square dancing. But
I love
that. That was called the Midnight Tip. At any rate.
Really?
square dancing is amazing, or any kind of folk dancing, because you are holding hands and you're interacting, and it's completely non-sexual, and people come as partners, but usually in any kind of folk dancing or reels or square dancing, you're rotating, and there's, you know, and especially there is non-gender specific folk groups. I mean, I don't know where, I was going to say our caller, but our writer is from, but I would do that one. There is a cuddle site. I think it's problematic for men because most men who are not on the asexual spectrum, many times it devolves or they're looking. And I had one experience that wasn't negative with that, which was a one-on-one. We're really haunted. It's not just the word. Okay. So I would say check out, there's a site. Can I say the name of the
please.
Site? It's Cuddle Comfort.
Great.
And I'm not sure if it's .org.
This was not the bad experience.
This was not the bad experience.
Okay,
that was a group thing. That was like a cuddle party kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
But Cuddle Comfort is matching one-on-one. It's just like a site for people to meet. And if you really don't want it sexual, I would go for a partner that doesn't match your, you know, maybe if it's a straight, you know what I'm saying, match in a way that you wouldn't be sexually interested to them.
Yes.
Because a lot of people will say their identity, you know, they identify as straight, but they'll see male or female. Also, if you're in L.A., there is, I haven't been, but I'm looking forward to it. It seems a little, it doesn't seem like, I know someone who's involved with it, so I'm sure it's queer friendly, but it doesn't seem like a particularly queer space. But I'm very interested in checking out, and that's called Cuddle Sanctuary.
Okay.
So I would do anything that is non-sexual, that's dance, that involves holding hands, and if you want a little bit closer, look for cuddle opportunities.
Cuddle opportunities, yes, I've been hearing about these so much.
There's also a book,
Is it Vitamin T?
No.
Oh, okay. Vitamin T is all about touch and its effect on your body.
I have this book on my e-reader, but it's really a book about approaching friends non-sexually to do cuddle and doing contracts and how to appear. I mean, that's...
Oh, my gosh. I love that.
I can't think of the name. Actually, Cuddle Sanctuary recommended the book, so probably on their site it might lead you to the book.
Oh, that's amazing. What a wealth of information.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Holly. Wow. All right, next question. Let's see. I am Generation Z, and I hear a lot about how my generation is so diverse and accepting, but I don't see it around me. I live in a small town. Everyone's super religious. No same-sex couples at prom. If you're gay, you're going to hell. People use FAG all the time as an insult. How can I feel less alone from gay kids my age when I am so physically isolated? The things I hear about my generation being super accepting truly feel more like myths than reality.
I think that is something to keep in mind, that like if you live in a place where you can even say out loud your truth, you're incredibly privileged, because not like that for the majority of the world still.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the fact that you were able to get this question to us, the internet is going to be the single greatest resource to connecting to queer people.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as I said at the top of the show, I grew up in a very, very small town. And then later in high school, I moved to a place called Yucca Valley, which is right next to Joshua Tree, to an even smaller town with even worse like homophobia and racism. There was like a full-blown chapter of the KKK up there, by the way.
Oh, my God.
And like, you know, people would spray paint, you know, fag on the door of a straight teacher's a classroom. So it was so terrifying. And I wasn't even out to the other out gay kid at school, because even that didn't feel safe.
Yeah.
And really, you just have to, honestly, it sucks, but it's like stiff upper lip kid.
Yeah.
Like, and get the hell out of there
as fast as you can.
Get to a city. It's the advice that gay people have been giving each other since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Get to a city and find chosen family if your family's not going to be there for you.
It's hard, too, because I went to a performing arts high school in New Jersey, which is like East Coast, potentially more liberal, even though I grew up in more of a conservative rural area. But the school was in, you know, you would think there were dancers there, and there was a drama program, and that's what I went to, the theater program, and it was mostly women and like three guys. And even there, I didn't feel comfortable coming out. I know other people now from like, you know, Facebook or being friends with them over the years who didn't come out. So I think it's sometimes odd to be like, oh, well, these certain places where it would be totally accepted, everybody can. And there are still these feelings of like not being able to. Like, there's so many reasons why people don't come out.
I felt completely alone all through high school, and I was literally, all my closest friends were gay as well.
Yeah.
They're all out now. It's like we were all just quietly in there together, you know?
And that's the intensity of, you know, what we internalize,
yes.
you know? And so, yeah, you just have to really, really understand that, like, some of us just get dealt hands in life that are a little more challenging. Mm-hmm.
And self-love and acceptance yes. is really, that's the only thing that you can have at any place in every level.
Mm-hmm.
When there's the big, you know, media thing with it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of us who are older was like, I don't know, I'm still single. I mean, you yeah. know, I don't know. This is the myth that we're all going to, you know, yeah. have. But what does get better is you learn more about what you can control.
Yeah, me.
So
yeah.
Everyone's never going to accept. It's never going to be that everyone accepts you. It's that you accept yourself and the people who need to accept you accept
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
It's never going to be this perfect world on any level.
Totally.
No one's ever going to, you know, always accept, you know, your vegan diet. it's not going to be that way.
And they ask, like, you know, how do I, you know, make it while I'm there? Because we can all say, like, oh, you got to love yourself, honey, like RuPaul says. But, you know, especially if you're a teenager, like, thanks.
Right.
Yeah.
I would also recommend my best, you know, coping defense mechanism was getting a sense of humor about things and yeah. learning to troll the fuck out of everyone around you as much as possible. I do it even here with like with cisgender people, because even in LA, just you know, we're better than other places, but it's still like a lot of work get people to understand, you know, trans identity. Like I performed as a drag queen, a femme queen for the first time recently, and a lot of people didn't quite know why I would want to do that. Even other trans people don't know why I would want to do that. And sometimes trans people will even like delegitimize each other
mm-hmm.
for not, you know, really, really hardcore adhering to you know, masculine gender presentation or feminine gender presentation. And honestly, all you can do is just say, well, if you don't like it, I'm going to find ways to like mess with you about it as often as possible. To what a safe. Don't put yourself in any harm's way doing it, but really learn to laugh at the straights and you'll have a much better time.
Yeah. Are we allowed to mention a political candidate?
Yes, of course, please.
So I'm a huge fan of Pete Buttigieg.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing that I love, which may be especially difficult to apply at a you know, formative years, but he really sees... He talks about understanding where people are coming from, seeing it through their view, what's their background. So, yeah, it's not going to work on every level. It's not an instant fix. But it is interesting to sometimes go, I want their compassion. Can I turn it around at all? Can I think, wow, they really grew up in a time or a place where this is what, that they are victims.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their minds are victims of some of that.
Yeah.
And what's the way in that's not combative?
Yeah.
But it's a way, because someplace in that, you know, molded thought thing, where's the entry place? Where is the little thing? So
yeah.
It's also interesting to look at the other way, that they're not just the enemy, they're victims of something different.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, hurt people sort of
thing. Exactly.
Yeah. And I feel like you've been unfortunately born into a pressure cooker. We both can absolutely relate. And yeah, you can spend your time, maybe it's not like it gets better, but it's like you get better.
You get stronger.
You're thin.
And there's also... there are a lot of, you know, you might think you have to graduate high school before leaving, but there are a lot of high school, private high schools, art related high schools that you can apply for scholarship money for
yes.
and maybe move before you're done with high school. You know,
yes.
I mean, some of them are pretty expensive, but I feel like if you can get the money together, move as soon as you can.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one last one. Let's see. What? Did we already read that one? Interesting. I have scrambled these up. Okay, here we go. Okay, whatever. I am a newly out gay girl and ready to take on the world. The problem is, sex ed at school only ever prepares you for straight sex, if it even does that, to be quite honest. I'm not, and I'm not really sure where to find, you know, tutorials. Porn is obviously no help. From Jamie.
Yeah, sex ed only prepares you for getting pregnant.
Yeah,
and how you shouldn't do it ever until you're married.
Yeah, I had abstinence-only sex ed. Yeah.
It's even interesting, and I host an erotic book club podcast here, and in the books that we read, oftentimes, like, if there'll be a virgin girl, and she's, like, leading up to being with the man, but she'll have an experience with a woman, but she's still a virgin. But I was like, but she just had sex with that woman.
Exactly.
And how often lesbian sex isn't even considered sex to some people. Like, if there's not penetration or a baby came. Can't be made or something.
Yes. Yeah, like, or like, you know, growing up, me and my friends would do what we call practicing when we get ready for boys. Yeah. Like, what? No, you were having your first kiss with your best friend at that sleepover.
Yeah.
It's very strange the way that we like have to desexualize, you know, feminine sexually entirely. And I would say that, you know, I had to learn a lot about my own body and a lot about my transition. So I can't imagine what, like, you know, just trying to figure out like the mechanics of sex is like. I just had to learn it on YouTube from people who were younger than me. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait, what's going to happen to my body? Thank you for letting me know, 22-year-old.
Yeah.
I think, too, the best time to learn, or the best way to learn about it is doing it. And the first time that you are with a woman, to just be open with communication, to be okay with not knowing every single thing. You don't have to have it be like a movie and you instantly rock each other's world and come instantly. And that communication will allow you to bond and make it an even better experience.
Yeah, you
so you're allowed to say, I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing. Does this feel good? Do you like this? And it doesn't make the romance go away. It's like an intimate, you know, loving way to be with somebody.
Totally. Yeah. You don't have to fake it till you make it.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't have to get the ultimate, like, gesture. Yeah.
That was a treat for Dropout.
So would your advice be to Jamie, first time with someone also inexperienced or experienced, or doesn't matter?
Think it matters. I think for your first time, it should be with someone that you feel comfortable with. You don't have to find the perfect formula of, they're the exact same age or they're a little bit older, so they'll know more. I think it's someone who treats, I'm going to cry a little bit, someone who treats you with dignity and respect when you have sex for the first time.
Yes.
Because it's so intense.
Beautiful. Yeah.
You just have to, you have to respect your own body and you have to respect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important, especially when you're young.
I love you.
So often women aren't taught that. They're not going to teach you that in sex ed, but your body is your own, and what you do to it and what other people do to it, it's for you to have control over.
It's so true. Yes. And sex can feel so like, you know, like we get caught up in the commercial thought of sex that's very
pushing
dominant.
Pushing against walls and
Yes. And it's like, no, it is actually an incredibly like tender, gentle thing. And there's absolutely room in there to be like, I've actually never done this before. Let's both figure this out together.
Right.
You know?
And if you are, you know, and you that sort of like tender stuff is so important to have that communication. But even if you are into like, well, they could say mild to wild on Grindr, if you approach the wild, it becomes even more paramount, the amount of agency and control you still have to know that you retain over your body. Especially if you identify as someone more on the submissive side, knowing that you need to be able to talk to that person and ask them any question and to be able to know that you're not going to be disappointing them in any way or you're not going to get some sort of weird guilt or confusion or judgment. You have to pick people that you go to bed with that you know are essentially like a best friend already.
Totally.
Yeah.
And laughter. In my sexual days, the best sex is when you can laugh.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when you queef and you both laugh.
It is very weird when no one laughs.
That can make good sex into great sex.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of things online that you can find, you know, and it doesn't have to be porn, which can be like so nightmarish when and you're like, I'm gonna do that. Auto Straddle is like a very fun like lesbian site, and they have, you can't imagine how many like listicles about like, then you do this.
I certainly
so,
can't.
Yeah.
I also highly recommend the webcomic, I think it's called Oh Joy Sex Toy.
Yes.
Which is, yeah, it's all those illustrations, and the couple who do it are super body positive, and they try to be as inclusive as possible. So there's a good chance you'll see someone who looks like you as they go through, like, here's how this sex toy works. Here's what we liked about and didn't like about. And they really break it down for you. And so I highly recommend that if you're like, I don't even know where to begin with my sexuality or what that would entail, especially as a lesbian. There's so much hardware involved.
Yeah, I remember I downloaded the audiobook of this book called The Joys of Strap-On Sex. And I was listening to it when I was like
classical music playing as
and I was just like a panicked virgin that was like, I don't know what I'll do when I have sex, and I'm just listening to this in like a Panera, just like the most like graphic stuff, and I'm just sitting there like, and no one knows, and like, oh my god. But that thing was like, that book is honestly crazy but very funny, and I think I got a lot out of it. So check out that book.
Yeah, get yourself to a Panera. Yeah. Have your soup and salad.
Get yourself to a Panera and learn about the joys of strap-on sex. Yeah, well, I think that's it. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. What a sweet episode.
Thank you.
This is very sweet. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a great week.
This has been a Dropout podcast. For video of today's show, plus more exclusive series, go to dropout.tv.